Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of February, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll also take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, that with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. And along the way, I'll update you on all the agricultural news for the afternoon. Don't forget to pick up your tickets to the all-day Agricultural Outlook, just about a week and a couple of days away now. If you want those mailed to you and need to order them as soon as possible at WILLAG.org, they're just $30, or you can call right now 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. More from the Closing Market Report in just a moment.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Friday afternoon, futures finished in the corn pit a bit lower. Nearby March contract at 354.5, down 1 cent. The May down a penny as well, 359.5. July at 364.25 in the corn pit, down 1.5. And next year's December corn down a penny and a half at $3.78.25. Soy complex, March beans down 4 at $8.55. The May at 863.5, down 2. And July at 870, down a penny and 3/4. November beans 876, 0.75 cents lower. Bean meal at 257.20, down 280, and the bean oil at 31.03, up 38. Wheat futures for the day down 2 cents, and the March at $4.43.25 for the soft red. July there at 459.5. The harvest month down 2.75. The harvest month July hard red at 464.5, down 3 cents. Live cattle futures February contract 17.5 cents lower, $137.70 the trade. April contract at 137.22.5. They're now down 12.5. Feeders at 158.50, down 60, and April's at 158.75, current trade down 52.5. Lean hogs at $71.10. They finished, are currently trading 2.5 cents lower, which reminds me that starting not Monday of next week, but Tuesday of next week, these numbers from the CME Group Livestock will also settle earlier than they have been. They'll settlements, those will close at 1:05 Central Time. So we'll have settlement prices for you during the closing market report. Haven't had those for quite some time. Looking forward to that. You, of course, are listening to willag.org. This is WILLAG.org.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
For the Illinois State Water Survey, this is State Climatologist Jim Angel. February temperatures are now 2.2 degrees above average. The statewide precipitation is 1 to 2 inches, except in the southeast where it is 2 to 4 inches. Snowfall has been heaviest in a wide band from St. Louis to Chicago, where amounts of 5 to 10 inches were common. Snowfall is under 5 inches for the rest of the state, including western and much of northern Illinois, and that's well below average for those areas. Soil temperatures around the state are now above the freezing mark at 4 and 8 inches, except for our most northern site in Freeport. In fact, we have some areas south of Interstate 70 with soil temperatures reaching into the 40-degree range. The forecast for this weekend is for highs to be in the 50s across Illinois on Saturday and in the 50s in the north and in the 60s in the south on Sunday. Highs will be in the upper 30s and 40s in the north and in the 60s in the south on Monday and Tuesday. Overnight lows during this period will be in the 30s in the north and the 40s in the south. The next storm system is expected to move through Illinois on Tuesday or Wednesday, bringing mostly rain into southern Illinois. Afterwards, colder air from the north will move in and our temperatures will get back to values closer to the average for this time of year. That means highs on Wednesday and Thursday will be in the 20s and 30s in the north and in the 40s in the south. Overnight lows will be in the teens and 20s. This is Jim Angel, State Climatologist for the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois.
And you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's a Friday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, to take up the close of the week's trade in Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us today.
Great to be with you again, Todd. Happy Friday afternoon.
Oh, happy Friday to you as well. Looking forward to having you here in the great state of Illinois next week, and then the following week, of course, for the all-day Ag Outlook. Again, those folks who have not bought their tickets, do that right now at willag.org, willag.org. But next week, I'll have you in Dan Zwicker traveling with me along with in Sherman at Springfield at the Farm Credit Illinois building office, Kurt Kimmel. And then that's on Tuesday evening of next week. And then on Wednesday at 10 o'clock in the morning at Lincoln Land Community College in Litchfield, you two will be joined by Chip Nellinger, and I'm really looking forward to that. We're trying to do something a little different with you each, letting you do about a 10-minute PowerPoint presentation. In Sherman, we'll also have Gary Schnitke with us. He'll do a little one, too. So it should be a couple of really good days there. And for those who are thinking, especially if you're in southern Illinois, I've had a couple of calls, frankly, Mike, that have come down, come up from there wanting to know about this Litchfield event because it's in conjunction with a larger event that goes with St. Francis Hospital. And it's an outreach simply to the ag community in that area. Folks can come. They do start at 8:30 in the morning. There is a tax specialist on for about an hour, hour and a half, and then a little break before they get to the 10 o'clock panel with us. But certainly it's open and available, and people can come to the Litchfield event. I know a few have called and asked for more details about that one, so now they have them. I'm looking forward to having you here next week. But maybe, Mike, we probably better talk about what's been happening in the marketplace and the grains and the oil seeds. Can we pick up where we left off this morning with the corn and the soybeans? And what those numbers kind of look like, and might be important, I think, to take up what's happened this week at the end of the week, probably for both the basis contracts and maybe just new selling that might have come into the marketplace because we're turning the calendar to March 1 and some bills are coming due.
This is a cash flow time. This is a cash flow crunch time, and I think you probably had a lot of producers make the decision in today and probably will follow through on Monday on whether they want to roll their contracts from March to May or go ahead and let cash, corn, and beans go and get their cash flow needs fulfilled. But then I think the bins become pretty tightly locked and sealed up until you get to maybe June 1 to June 30th time period. Todd, I going back to the beans and the corn, you had brought up a really interesting point today in the morning commentary about the overall ending stocks numbers that USDA threw out at us this morning. And they took the bean carryover down a little bit to 440 million bushels, took the corn carryover up pretty substantially, closer to the 2 billion bushel level. And they did that mainly through the yield, not as much through the acres, but through the yield. And I started to look at it more, and then I started to watch the trade a little bit more. And we've been on this pathway of the trade acknowledging what the USDA is saying, and they're actually putting more premium into the November beans at the expense of December corn. Bean-corn ratio closed at 2.32. The 2016 high is 2.33. I could see us next week potentially, if we don't get a turnaround in the wheat in the crude market because of what USDA put out at us this week, I could see the potential for us taking out that high in the ratio and the trade is signaling to the producers to go ahead and build more bean acres up. And guess what? They're already looking at that, and they were before this week's meetings in Washington. So I think a word to the producers right now is be very careful about letting a bean rally go at this point, because we may be seeing a substantially bigger switch in acreage to beans in relation to the corn, depending on how we trade this next couple weeks before that March 15th deadline at the crop insurance.
If you watched open interest, and I was thinking about this, especially on the soybeans, maybe on the corn as well, has it dropped? And so then if that's the case and we have a marketplace with prices moving lower and open interest dropping, doesn't that result also in a bounce in the market eventually too?
Yes, and I think that to add to that point is that we have had some pretty substantial levels of fund-related selling based upon, you know, who tracks them. But I've seen numbers as high as 13, 16,000 contracts a day that the funds have sold in terms of corn or beans, depending on what day it was. So you're also on your way now, and I'm pretty sure the CFTC numbers today will show and indicate that we are back to building a very large non-commercial or speculative managed money short position at this stage of the game. And I think, to me, carrying through with what we talked about this morning, especially with the turn lower in the crude oil and the move back above the 100-day moving average in the dollar and the way the wheat market traded, we're, I think, squeezing the juice out of the grape. We're taking the premium out of the volatility. We're taking the premium out of the futures market going into the March acreage report at the end of the month. So I could see the end of the first quarter being a lot like we talked about today, 1986, 1987 time period when it came to the crude oil market. And Baker Hughes, interestingly enough, came out with their update for weekly rig counts. And in 2015, we had the biggest weekly cut every week in and week out since 1988. So we are very similar to the mid-1980s in the energy market. And again, for producers, wheat and crude need to lead the lows here.
And you think that's going to happen then, don't you?
I do if the Chinese data improves, and I keep pretty close track on that. I talked to the number two guy at Straits Financial this week who just returned from China, and he said, you know, we're mostly neutral China right now. He said he was just coming back from Beijing. He said they got problems. There's no question about it. They let the capital controls get out from underneath them, and they didn't let their manage their stock market well enough or tried to overmanage it. But he said, we're pretty friendly in Indonesia and Vietnam. They're actually opening offices in Indonesia and Vietnam, and they're very friendly India in 2016 right now. So I think if China just holds it together at that 6.5-7% growth, you're going to see the rest of Asia maybe pick up some slack, especially when it comes to the food category. And, you know, we're hitting something like a 21-year high right now in the Malaysian palm markets because of the droughts over there in places like Indonesia. So we're not looking at that right now. We're looking at wheat and crude oil.
Okay, so just to reiterate, while you're feeling friendly the month of March, you're telling producers not to let any rally slip away from them. I suppose that's for old crop. Is that as well for new crop?
Yeah, and let me clarify. I'm not friendly the month of March. I'm trying to say that they're going to squeeze the juice out of the grape between now and the acreage report at the end of March. So by the time we get to the end of the first quarter, that's when oil found a bottom, was the end of the first quarter of 1986. So I'm talking about as we get into the first of the second quarter, we'd have a better chance of seeing some daylight.
So it's longer out, longer term out then at this point. So producers are going to have to wait it out. But you're thinking that they've made the sales they're going to make, and they're ready to close the bin doors anyway.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think especially in your area, Todd, where the yields were much more up and down in the corn.
What else do we need to talk about for the day?
Well, I would say be on guard for the pork complex. We had pretty good cash movement again this week. It did taper off at the end of the week, and I still am bothered by that cold storage number. We're up about 17% in cold storage stocks versus December. I have heard in Indiana that there is a significant amount of PED virus along with PERS going on. I haven't heard that anywhere else, but if we don't see that take hold in some other areas or make it into the news wires, I would say be ready to get some hog hedges in place for this first quarter because we're back up above $70 in the April.
Hey, thanks so much. Looking forward to seeing you next week.
See you next week, sir. I'll make some barbecue and bring it over.
Okay, thanks so much. It'll be you and Danny Zwicker. We'll have a Texas and Kansas barbecue cook-off next week. They'll be in town for a couple of Ag Outlooks. You can find them on our website at willag.org. And then while you're there, make sure, because the following week they'll still be with us over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, that you pick up your tickets. Do that today. Don't wait. Right now, willag.org, just $30, 800-898-1000. But do it today, please. We'll start today's agricultural news with a bit of conjecture. A merger wave among agricultural chemical makers may entice incoming Bayer boss Werner Baumann to put the German drug maker's crop science unit in play. A sale of the like could fetch up to 39 billion euros and would complete the company's transformation into solely a pharmaceuticals manufacturer. Yet the group's record revenue and rising profit mean there's no pressure on Baumann to make a move. Bayer's Crop Sciences division may hold the key to unlocking value, especially since the sector is in a merger frenzy. The tie-up between DuPont and Dow will create a giant with almost double Bayer's agricultural chemical sales. Swiss crop protection manufacturer Syngenta, which repelled an approach by Monsanto, is being bought by ChemChina for $43 billion. A joint venture between Monsanto and Bayer may be one potential option, though Bayer considers Crop Sciences as a core business and would be a reluctant seller. We'll stay on the international front and what's been happening in agriculture. U.S. agriculture giant Cargill and Ukraine's MV Cargo said they would build and operate a grain terminal at Ukraine's Black Sea port of Yuzhny under a $100 million joint venture agreement that was signed on Wednesday. The terminal near Ukraine's biggest port city of Odessa will have an annual loading capacity of 5 million tons of grain and other commodities. Cargill, one of the world's largest privately owned corporations, said construction on the terminal would begin this month and was expected to be completed by the spring of 2018. Ukraine is currently able to ship about 35 million tons of grain from its seaports, but the government has said it wants to double export loading capacity within the next 5 years. Ukraine is likely to export a record 37 million tons of grain this season. We'll stay with the international business side of agriculture, but come back to the United States. An affiliate of Spain's troubled Abengoa filed for U.S. Chapter 11 bankruptcy this week, saying in court documents it had up to $10 billion in both liabilities and assets. The filings by Abengoa Bioenergy U.S. Holding was prompted by two involuntary bankruptcy petitions earlier this month by suppliers who alleged they were owed more than $4 million. The bankruptcy comes a week after Abengoa, the engineering and renewable energy parent company, said it needed 826 million euros or $908 million of cash to make it through 2016. And another 300 million or thereabouts in 2017. The Spanish company, which builds and operates solar, thermal, and biofuels plants across the world, is facing a March 28 deadline to reach a wide-ranging restructuring plan with its banks and bondholders. If it fails to get a deal, it could become Spain's largest bankruptcy. Now let's stay with biofuels. Six companies have now brought cellulosic ethanol facilities online, but with widely varying costs that indicate where innovation is still needed to make next-generation biofuels competitive. Of the six existing commercial cellulosic ethanol facilities in the world, Raisin's projected price of $2.17 per gallon is the lowest. Cellulosic ethanol is a biofuel produced from wood, grass, and inedible parts of plants, obviating the need to cut into production of food crops such as corn and cane sugars. Raisin has the lowest projected minimum ethanol selling price of $2.17 per gallon, while, we'll go back to this company, Abengoa's capital-intensive $500 million Hoboken facility has the highest price of $4.55, with feedstock cost emerging as the most critical variable. Improving feedstock aggregation and lowering feedstock cost is critical in cellulosic ethanol achieving cost parity, as a feedstock cost impacts total cost by about 40%. That according to Wang Shang Yu, who's with Lux Research. He's an analyst and lead author of a report called Uncovering the Cost of Cellulosic Ethanol Production. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Hey, don't forget to pick up your tickets for the All-Day Agricultural Outlook at willag.org, willag.org, or 800-898-1065. I'm telling you, do it right now, but don't wait, because we need to get this done. 800-898-1065 or online at willag.org. One of the folks that will be there presenting is Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist from the U of I. He'll talk not only about crop insurance, but also about the Arc County payments for the last crop, or the 2015 growing season, and what those will look like. He and Nick Polson wrote a note for the Farm Doc Daily website. You can go check it out at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Here's what it says about corn payments in the state of Illinois. The Illinois average estimated Arc County payment on corn base is over $65 an acre. Payments would be triggered in over 90% of Illinois counties, and the maximum payment would be triggered for corn in roughly two-thirds of Illinois counties. Only three counties with a corn yield reported by NASS in Illinois for 2015 would not receive a payment at the current price projection of $3.60. These counties include Monroe and Pope in southern Illinois, and then right next door here to Champaign County, Piatt County. Not Champaign, but Piatt County. So the three counties not receiving a payment would be Monroe, Piatt, and Pope in Illinois. Their county average yields last year were well above the benchmark levels. Adjusting the projected marketing year average price for corn to the high end of the WASDE range, which is $3.85, would still, in fact, result in our county payments on corn base acreage across most of the state over $45 an acre, with more than 75% of the counties triggering payments in just over 25% of the counties triggering the maximum payment. The average estimated our county on soybean base in Illinois is just over $28 an acre. Payments would be triggered in more than 70% of the counties, with more than 15% of the counties triggering the maximum amount. A handful of counties located mainly in southern and east central Illinois had reported NAS yields which were high enough to result in zero ARC County payment estimates on soybeans. Champaign County, in fact, is among those, increasing the projected marketing year average price for soybeans to the higher end of the WASDE range at $9.55. Lowers the ARC County payment estimate to $6.60 per base acre, with less than 40% of the counties triggering a payment and no counties triggering the maximum payment on soybean acres. Again, you'll probably want to read this online. You can do that at the Farm Doc Daily website. It was posted this week. You'll just want to scroll down for a bit until you see the 2015 ARC County payment estimates for corn and soybeans headline. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. The folks at the Andersons facility in Everly, Iowa, are not available this afternoon, though their bids are online. So we do have those for their March corn. They're 28 under that in the northwestern part of the great state of Iowa. And for soybeans, and they are 60 under at this point for the Feb delives, and March at 62 under. So those are the bids that are coming out of Iowa. They might make you feel a little better about what's happening in your part of the world. Again, just a couple of quick reminders. If you want to find that article about the ARC County payments, and it does have maps with it that include maps of not only Illinois, but of the entirety of the United States. So you can find your county, or at least a good estimate of it probably, at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You can also, while you're cruising around the websites, pick up tickets to the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's at willag.org, willag.org. You'll buy those tickets for the All-Day, just $30, including the meal over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. It's a really good deal and a really great day. Hope you will join us. That on Tuesday, the 8th day of March, so not next Tuesday, but the following one, next Tuesday evening. I'll be in Sherman. That's out of sight of Springfield, just to the north of it at the Farm Credit Illinois building. You can find information on the website there. It's in the calendar. And on Wednesday, we'll be in Litchfield, and more information also on the calendar, all at willag.org, willag.org. A busy week for us here, traveling across the state of Illinois and meeting with producers and farmers and those involved in the agricultural industry. In a couple of minutes, I'll be back. We'll talk about the weather forecast, that with Eric Snodgrass. He's at Agrible, and that's located on the south end of the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
It's National Pistachio Day. No one knows why the day is celebrated in February. Pistachios are actually harvested in the U.S. in September. It's said that individuals who stand among pistachio trees and hear ripening fruit pop open will have good luck and fortune. On this day in agricultural history in 1852, John Harvey Kellogg was born. He was a surgeon, vegetarian, and health food pioneer. While superintendent at the Battle Creek Sanitarium, he developed the first breakfast cereals for his patients, flaked wheat and toasted cornflakes. His brother, William W. Kellogg, founded the Battle Creek Toasted Cornflakes Company to produce cornflakes for sale to the public. In 1895, Michael Joseph Owens of Toledo, Ohio, patent an automatic glass-blowing machine that could make multiple bottles at the same time. It was a big advance in bottle making. He eventually founded the Owens Bottle Machine Company and the Libby Owens Glass Company. The company specializes in glass for aircrafts, cars, trains, and, of course, cooking utensils. In 1903, Richard Jordan Gatling died. Before inventing the Gatling gun, he was instrumental in agriculture. He developed a machine for sowing rice, wheat, and other grains, and invented a steam plow, what we would today call a tractor. He also invented a process for steam cleaning raw wool and a wheat drill. Much of the manufacture of Gatling's ag imports occurred in St. Louis. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Don't forget to get your tickets for the all-day agricultural outlook at the Beef House. Just $30 online, willag.org, or 800-898-1065. Do it right now. One of the folks that will be over there is Eric Snodgrass of Agribull. You'll hear him each and every Friday on this program. In fact, he's on the line right now. Eric, thanks for doing the show today and for getting ready for the big show over at the Beef House on the 8th day of March. I appreciate that. Boy, let's go back and take a look at what happened this past week. That was kind of a rough winter storm that made its way through our part of the world. Can you recap it for me?
Sure. We most certainly had blizzard conditions across a chunk of Illinois, especially eastern Illinois. And you got to have 35 mile an hour winds. You got to have some snow falling. It's got to reduce the visibility. And we had all of that. Some people were surprised, though, by the amount of snow that we received. A lot of people thought we were going to get quite a bit. But when you have snow falling, when it's 32, 33 degrees outside, that snow compacts really, really well. It's a very wet and slushy and kind of gross snow. So that's why most locations around here received somewhere between 3 and 5 inches. But what was interesting was that while we were getting that blizzard here, the south was getting lit up with some severe weather. So far this year, we've had 132 reports of tornadoes. That puts us at the second kind of fastest pace in the last 10 years in terms of tornado activity. So yeah, that blizzard was impressive around here, but thankfully it's not really having a big impact for our weekend.
As we head further into the end of winter and then, of course, turning into springtime, I'm wondering about soil moisture conditions. How do we stand?
Yeah, well, it's great. Basically, the eastern two-thirds of the country is largely void of drought. Little spot in North Dakota, but it's, you know, that might be actually a good thing as they try to get into the fields early there. So soil moisture content is high. So even if we do sustain a little bit of dryness, that's not going to really have a huge impact as we start to go into plant. But what I kind of see coming up in the short term is a pretty active weather pattern. So we're going to have to keep a close eye on that soil moisture, as we don't want it to be too wet because that might, you know, that might really start to hinder our planting efforts that are going to start here in, you know, a little over a month.
We've been in a yo-yo sort of pattern. That's what you've called it. Is that going to be the case for the weekend and into next week?
This weekend, big ridge in the jet stream. That's where the jet stream bulges to the north. We're going to see some warmth out of it across most of the Great Plains and across the Midwest. 50s on Saturday, maybe even cracking 60 on Saturday around here. I'm sorry, cracking 60 on Sunday, sorry. But Sunday's going to be a windy day. That's because there's a low-pressure system that's going to try to cut across northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin. We may get some rain in southern Illinois, kind of southern parts of Illinois, but we'll have to watch that closely. But definitely some snow in Wisconsin and Michigan. Then we got another system, Monday into Tuesday, hits the same area. And then we have another system that comes late Tuesday night. And this is the one that I'm really getting concerned about. It's this system that's going to hit, you know, beginning of the week, sometime around Tuesday into Wednesday, gets cranking up to our south rather than to our north. And when that happens, that puts us on kind of the wintry mix side of these things. There's a lot of uncertainty in that forecast, though, because it's the models are not handling it very well just at this point. But we need to keep our eye out for about 4 days from now for a system to come out of the kind of the Arklatex region, Arkansas, Louisiana, and Texas. So yeah, that yo-yo just keeps going up and down. And what's really kind of fun is that we may start the first week of March a little cool, but then I see the second week possibly being, you know, quite warm and very pleasant. So I don't know. With that forecast, I may have just made the groundhog right. We'll have to wait and see.
Hey, thanks so much, Eric. We appreciate it. Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible. He's from right here in Urbana-Champaign and will be a guest on our All Day Ag Outlook in that second beautiful week of March.